first, no love at all. There will never be, yeah, yeah, no love at all. We also got to realize we are one people, yeah. Got to realize that we are one people, yeah. We got to realize we are one people, or there will never be no love at all.
Between night and dawn. It is the hour when most people die, when sleep is deepest, when nightmares are most real. It is the hour when the sleepless are haunted by their deepest fear, when ghosts and demons are most powerful. The hour of the wolf is also the hour when most children are born.
Thank you. Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a Saturday morning program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. This morning, well, it's a pitching show, so we won't deal with our usual topic so much, but we'll touch upon them and on station issues. Stay tuned.
Yeah, I think I'd like to say a few things about that myself. And one of them is
hold
that
on, someone is at the door.
Oh, well.
I'll keep talking to
okay,
you.
Right. One of the things that I've noticed about WBAI when I compare it to a lot of radio stations is the fact that WBAI and Pacifica seems to look at people who listen to the station in a way that's
who's there? Yeah. Okay, hold on.
All right, we're going to give you an update in just. All right, Margo or Bob, whoever. Hello. Hello. Hello.
And they were off the air. We were off the air from February 11th, 1977, till, I guess April 1st, 1977, in an event that, to me today, you know, people always talk about the embattled WBAI. Here we have our 50th anniversary of the radio station joining Pacifica. And yet, still, the New York Times instead writes a story not about the 50th anniversary, but about our local board and some of the dysfunctionality of it. So, even with all this stuff going on, that, you know, if you've listened to the station for 20 minutes, you've heard some of the backlash from it here or there to me and to a few other people. The crisis, the WBAI crisis, was February 11th, 1977. At least that was the date it centered around. It was an event that, as of the event itself, went on and occurred for about 3 months as a hot item. And there was a court trial. People were arrested. Bob Vass and folk. We occupied the station. The local board shut us off. The Pacifica National Board came to New York to tried to do this. Who won? I'm not sure. I think the listeners lost. And we lost insofar as we came back on the air with the same personnel, for the most part. But we came back on the air with a great loss of trust in our listenership. 1977 was a critical time. Some people would end the 60s and 73. But certainly, the 70s were also a time of a countercultural revolution. And here at WBAI, that counterculture ended in so many ways with a rude awakening of its own inner politics in 1977. And it's a very, very strange thing to me how few people want to talk about this kind of thing. On the day, on January 10th of this year, when we were hastily put together celebrating our having joined Pacifica on January 10th, 1960, World Broadcast Associates, Inc., WBAI, became a part of the Pacifica Foundation on that year, on that date. Bob Fass was in our conference room, where we have people right now to answer phone calls, by the way, at 212-209-2950. And I was talking with him. He and I were chatting a little bit, and I brought, and he said, I hadn't seen him in years. And Fass said to me, "I'd like to thank you, Jim, for remembering to mention the 1977 crisis." Well, the idea to me that it isn't on everybody's lips, including those who had not been around, was always an astonishing thing. And what's even more astonishing, apparently, is how few people want to talk about it then or now. There are these two people that are filming a documentary about Fass, and they, cinema verite kind of thing, I guess, and they follow him around and film everything, and they heard Bob and I talking on this topic, and so they began filming. I noticed them and sort of, of course, Bob is very aware of them, so we talked about this time, and went on for about 5 or 10 minutes or so. And when we were done, they came over and said, "Yeah, thank you so much for that. Are you willing to go on record talking about 1977? And I said, "Well, yeah, duh, of course." And they said, "No, you have no idea how few people actually want to discuss it." And I gave them the name of one or two people, one of whose voice you just heard, are probably willing to discuss such a thing. That would... that, of course, would be Margot Adler, she who created this show that you are now listening to, Hour of the Wolf. And, well, it was an astonishing thing. It was, that nobody really wanted to cover this. Nobody really wants to go on about it. And I'm not going to dedicate the whole show to it or anything like that, but what you heard, that little bit that you heard, which is actually from a BBC documentary, the BBC finds what happened at WBAI in 1977 worth, I think it's about a 90-minute documentary. I have part two. We actually heard the beginning of part two and not part one. I don't have it. I'm going to try to get my hands on it. Maybe one of these years, or actually maybe soon enough, we can get the station to broadcast the whole thing as part of our 50th anniversary celebration. And and I'm not going to go into the blow-by-blow detail of what happened. Also, as each and every year, as we get further away, and it is now 33 years, after all, 33 years and 2 days, but who's counting? Exactly what events happened to whom, who did what to whom, and all that. They were controversial at the time, and now they're not only controversial, but they're also mired in memory and different things like that. For me, at least. I mean, for some people, certainly for Fass, they are crystal clear. For me, the question of what really went on, who were, you know, who was really trying to accomplish what. The idea that we were going to be sold down the river, as it were, or down the dial, or, you know, gotten rid of as part of an evil plan by our, you know, very liberal local advisory board is really not very likely. So, you know, in those days, I saw everything as good and evil, black or white. Everything was bipolar, if you were. You were only 100% this or 100% that. Because it was such a hot-button topic. And as time recedes, you know, of course those blacks and whites become gray, and you say, well, you know, obviously, these people, not all of these people, certainly, wanted to do us harm. So something else was at play there. So what was it? I have theories. I have ideas. And at some point we'll talk about it much more. But there were two things that I wanted to get across. There was a time when WBAI was not on the air. We had met the enemy, and it was us. It was not some COINTEL organization. It was not agents who had come in. It was the stations, or I should say Pacifica's and the stations, Inner Politics, that did us in. And we went off the air. We were occupied the building, we the staff, having been taken off the air by a vote of the local advisory board from February 11th, 1977, until we were evicted from the building March 11th, 1977. In that time, I was one of the people very much, I wouldn't say hardly in charge of the occupation, but there were about two or three people who never, ever left the building. Other people went home, they took showers, they lived their lives, and we had, you know, a plan by which people could call, by which we could call people, and, you know, we'd call one person, and that person would call three people, and each of those people would call three people, so that within a few minutes we could mobilize and have an occupation force at the station. And on one morning, on the morning of March 11th, 1977, in fact, the local board showed up with city marshals to evict us from the building. That's when Bob and four other people, Lynn Samuels, Abraham Ague, and two other folk were arrested. Bob actually taken away in handcuffs. And there was a brokered treaty, a brokered alliance that put us back on the air with the same staff, so long as you were willing basically to sign a loyalty oath. And I should say most of us, there were a few people that refused to do it and never came back. Dolores Costello, the now late Dolores Costello, the woman who you heard on with Margot, was broadcasting from an undisclosed location, because they'd cut the electricity to the building we were in, to the station itself. We were in a church. But we then began broadcasting from an undisclosed location over to the transmitter. So and even then, when they cut some of the electricity there, the phone line still worked. And, of course, we broadcast directly through phone lines. So we stayed on the air for several hours after. Where was I going with all this? Oh, yes. Well, people were arrested. I was doing just the most basic timeline. So then on March 11th, we were cast out of the building by the local board with the city marshal doing the deed. And we came back on the air appropriately on April 1st, on April Fool's Day, 1977 with an uneasy alliance. As I said, Some People Never Came Back Fast was off the air at that point for something like 5 years or so. It was a mess. Obviously, Bob has never forgotten or forgiven any number of the issues then, and I may not see eye to eye on what was going on the other hand, I think he's more savvy about it than I am, and of course he's justified. Of course he is, no question about it. It doesn't matter whether I perceive the same things he perceived. What happened to him and with him was the kind of thing that should not happen at a Pacifica radio station. But it happened, it did. And we were off the air for that time, and when we came back, it was, we have not ever, ever since 1977, gotten back the subscriber levels that we had before that crisis. In the mid-70s, late 60s and mid-70s, we were, you know, one of the most listened to, one of the most important radio stations, I dare say, not only in New York City, but in the country itself. And we lost, you know, having gone off the air, we lost the trust of a lot of people, a lot of our listeners, and lost a certain amount of that listener sponsorship. That brings us to today. We dasn't let any such thing ever happen again. And it's not just about the politics. Hopefully now, even though our politics are still pretty bizarre, I would say we're better off now than we were 1 year ago, much better off now than we were a year ago. And there's still controversy going on of all different kinds. But this is, we're still in a financial crisis. Again, not as much as we were. Now, I don't have, last week I had a great science fiction-based premium and stuff like that. I don't have a special premium for this week. I will have one next week. And by the way, I will only be on next week if we make money this week. I was told that outright. Last week we had a special 40th anniversary edition of The Star Pit. And by the way, we can offer that this morning. It's a registered premium. And if you did not take advantage of that wonderful, wonderful, I said having produced half of it myself, offering, you still can. That's $120 for four CDs. Two CDs are the original radio drama of The Star Pit, and then the other two CDs are from the New York Review of Science Fiction reading event that was a tribute to that original radio drama, which the first half of which was Delaney talking about the what it was like producing that radio drama here at WBAI in 1967, and then the second half of which was a performance of two key scenes from The Star Pit. And those are rare. Many people don't know The Star Pit itself. So I'm not going to go into that whole pitch for that whole premium right now, but I will say it is available this week. For $120, you get four CDs. Outside of that, we have the generic premiums. But you know what we have? We have another premium. We have the premium that I am really going to try to push this week. And it's a more difficult to push, a more difficult fundraising item, because what it is a virtual item. And no, it's not your own access to Google Buzz or anything like that. What it is WBAI, the assurance, helping assure that we don't bleeping go away again like we did in 1977. The enemy is still largely us, and it is also finances. And we need to be sure that we stay around. Okay, I'm putting on my glasses now so I can look through the generic premiums. Okay, well, yeah, now we do have some cool I wouldn't do this without Max. We do have a bunch of some interesting radio dramas. He can come in at some point and talk about them. As I said, I'm going to have a very cool one next week involving the book Dark Matter, and the editor of that book will be here. Yes, I do see, in fact, that the Star Pit anniversary. Come on, folks, Star Pit is two words. Is indeed a registered premium eating DVD. God, that's not, talk about a lot of roughage. I'm looking for the, you know, do we have any t-shirts, any hats? Something called Off the T-shirt. Okay, yeah, that's obviously an off the hook thing. And they're very cool. It's not that, you know, you shouldn't get these things. They're wonderful. It's just that these are created by other producers so that they can pitch them on their shows, and I don't want to interlope. But so the thing that I am really pushing, the premium that I'm really offering, is the assured continuance of WBAI. The idea, the original idea behind Pacifica Radio, which was formed in the late 40s, mid to late, about 46, 47, is give us money, we'll use it to stay on the air. That's how it goes. And that doesn't mean to, you know, to pay outrageous salaries to people and stuff like that. Again, the vast majority of workers here at WBAI are unpaid. So become a subscriber. That's it. Or make a donation. $25 makes you a subscriber to WBAI. Oh, you're already a subscriber, you say. Well, give a gift subscription. Give more. As Kenneth Davis would constantly say, give until it helps. And that's the bottom line here. We have to make serious money this week, or else instead next week. I have this whole thing planned out. It's going to be a great show, but it's not even going to happen if we don't make money this week. And this is a threat. I was given that threat. That's precisely what I was told. Because we were originally going to do that this week, but the elements did not come together in time, getting the premium together and the two guests, Cherie Renee Thomas. And I have to talk to the other person yet, but I think he should know who he is. Listening to his Lady Gaga at home, at any rate. So that's been put off for a week. So I am here this week instead of a tape. But, you know, as I said, with that proviso, in order to come on next week, instead of being preempted for some fundraising tape, selling something that's not related to the usual topic of this program, then we need to do well this week. And the station needs to do well. That's all there is to it. So the number to call to pledge is 212-209-2950. And if you'd like to give a lot of money, I recommend giving $120. So you can get that premium that I offered and played a portion of last week from the radio drama The Star Pit by Samuel R. Delaney, and the celebration of that radio drama. It's an amazing, wonderful thing. But rolling back, getting back to the whole 1977 thing, there were sides to be taken. There were issues to be fought, and in some ways they were won, in some ways they were lost. But we have to make sure that they continue not to be lost, even though the radio memory, can't call it the racial memory, the DNA memory of this radio station, a lot of, in my humble opinion, a lot of what we hear on the air, a lot of the current politics of the station that are being fought now are still the politics of the issues that were going on in 1977. They have never really been fully settled. They have never really found a happy medium. And those issues are important to the world, and they are important to WBAI and to Pacifica Radio. And in some ways, they've torn it apart, but in other ways, they help keep certain things alive. And we need to make sure that we can survive this and that we can get past it. And in, that's what that noise was. I finally found a pot. Ah, that's much better. Were you? I thought it was just in my headphones, but it sounds like it was on the air. Here it is again. Yeah, that's what it is. You know what it is? That's a mic to the tally room. It sounds to me like just so much electronic hum. Okay, much better. yes, we need to repair the equipment in this bleeping place. 212-209-2950. So the question is, stay on the air, don't stay on the air. That was the issue in 1977. In February 1977, and it very, very much remains an issue today. It is something that we need to continue to fight for, and I ask you to join our side. I ask you to make a decision to keep this radio station on the air and make a phone call now, 212-209-2950, and make a pledge. And ask yourself, well, that all-important question. Which side are you on?
Come all you good workers, good news to you I'll tell of how the good Lord come in here to dwell.
Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?
skip for the bosses, don't listen to their lies. Poor folks ain't got a chance unless they organize.
Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you?
Natalie Merchant. God, I love her version of that song. I mean, there's a lot of great versions of that song, and it was such a rousing song when it was new, and somehow she came out with that redo, probably the first major rethinking of that song in many years, rather than somebody just picking up a guitar and doing, you know, great union songs or something like that. And she revitalized that, and I can listen to that over and over, and sometimes at home I do just that. Wow, I love that version of that song. It's from a, I don't remember what album of hers it's on originally. I got it from a retrospective double CD of Natalie Merchant's work. This is WBAI in New York City. Listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio at 99.5 FM and at WBAI.org. This program is usually Hour of the Wolf, and I am often Jim Freund. This is one of our fundraising mornings for the radio station itself that brings you this program. A program mostly about the literary ends of science fiction fantasy. And I will talk about such things for a little while and possibly take phone calls. But I see that we're already getting some calls, and I'll take them for a short time. Doubtless, this is going to be about 1977. And as I, let's see which side they're on. But let me also mention, by the way, we haven't gotten one pledge yet. We haven't gotten one phone call yet with money attached. And the whole continuance of this program during the fundraising drive, not to mention the big picture, the whole continuance of this radio station, is dependent on you making a call to pledge. And, you know, the very talk about 1977, the very idea that there was a time, a two-month period, in which we were taken off the air, that has subsequently was largely about money, and I think a lot of what had to do with the crisis at the time was to obtain money. Well, it has happened. Don't let it ever happen again. Call and pledge. 212-209-2950. Call and pledge. Call and pledge. Let's see here. Good morning. You're on the air. Hello.
Yes, good morning, Jim.
I knew it was you. The light had Monroe written on it.
Right, and the station has my name written on it.
No doubt.
And And the point is that I'm even concerned about the Pacifica Archives, because while they're doing an outstanding job on early voices on Pacifica, even before WBAI joined it, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There were the California stations, KPFA, and was it KPKA?
No, KPFA, KPFK.
KPFK.
Then WBAI, then WPFW. No, no, it's KPFT, and then WPFW.
All right.
Those
now,
are the five
the
stations.
The point is that I went to a Washington, D.C. Pacifica meeting when I had my terrible time with Al Lewis saying, Monroe, there is no free speech on my show. When I talked about, wanted to talk about Mayor Bloomberg admitting that he
destroyed
marijuana.
Okay. Yeah, let's not get off topic here.
But what I'm trying to explain to the listenership, and this is going on the archives, you know that, and I thank you for taking my call, because as you say, you knew chances are that I would awake.
No, there was no chance involved.
Well, I did miss that time that Bob Fast called in. You remember that one?
Oh, yeah, that's a long time ago.
And you have never played his discussion with you, which would be lovely, because I'm not sure that you recorded it. And in those days, we didn't have the WBAI archive. What I'm trying to say is that I have asked you, and I've been willing, and John Stanley, as far as I know, is still alive, and he was responsible for calling in to Richard Barr's program, which was on.
Well, let's move along.
And he said, we can't discuss. This is John Stanley.
Yeah, but there's one other listener who knows what you're talking about. So let's move along.
It's always been this case. If you don't have the person you're talking about on a line to the station, a conference call, let's say, you're not allowed to discuss anything, and as a matter of fact, they called it dirty laundry. You're not allowed to air dirty laundry. And I always say, you got to clean your dirty laundry, and you got to move on. But the point is that people are confused. Now, for instance, if I say that the person who was brought in as general manager...
Okay, well, I feel that we're getting very far afield from my topic this morning. Yes,
well,
yes.
You're talking about the station being removed from the air. And you remember when I called...
I'm talking about what happened in 1977, and I'm asking for money now, and we're not making money now, okay?
Right.
So we are way off topic. Way off topic.
No, I'm urging people to subscribe and be members, even though there is no longer that beautiful magazine called The Folio, or even a remote... shall we say, little newspaper that had about four pages of...
Well, there's nothing in print, but we do have a fairly thriving website.
Yes, yes, except that the website does not have a message board. And the message board that is used by loyal WBAIers, free speechers, is called listenerforums.net.
Well, okay, but I must say that none of the people, hardly any of the people that I see there are loyal.
Well, wait a minute.
They're all destructive.
There's difference of opinion, which is freedom of speech.
Fine, but that doesn't... What does this have to do with Hour of the Wolf making money this morning?
Well, I'll tell you what it has to do. Unless we're dedicatedly honest and discuss what happened in 77... Well, what happened was that Pacifica put in Anna Kossoff and Pablo Guzman, Anna Kossoff as general manager, and Pablo Guzman as program director over the people who were doing it, because they were desperate to get improved and, as you mentioned, returning to the numbers that of membership that had prevailed before the Vietnam War ended.
Yes. Well, not... Yes, yes. Okay.
You know,
yeah, okay. So far, I agree.
That these two people who were unknown to the WBAI audience at that time, virtually.
No, Guzman had been on the air in the 60s,
yeah,
don't
right,
forget.
But not saying, oh, this. He wasn't talking about what he thought he could do, and the rumor went out that there was going to be wall-to-wall salsa music to attract the Hispanic, Latino crowd.
Well, there was more than a rumor. We knew that there was going to be at least a block of period. The rumor then became that this was going to become a permanent thing.
Well, all right, but the point
is... And there was some evidence to the idea and to the fact that there was an entire staff waiting to come in and replace everybody else on the staff.
Right, and that was a threat to longstanding listeners.
Exactly.
And the point is that WBAI, even to this very day, the LSB, the local station board, which is headed by Mitch Cohn, who...
and we need to point out that the structure is very different today. That was the LAB in those days, and this is now the LSB, which is an elected body. In those days, it was an appointed body.
Right, but appointed of caring people, allegedly.
Of what?
And you see, this is the problem because...
I didn't hear what you said. Would you please repeat it?
Well, it was...
appointed of what people?
Caring, concerned WBAIers.
Well, they were.
Yeah, well, let me...
I may not agree with them on anything, but they were concerned.
All right. Now, here we
Most of them.
I'm going to say something, and I want to be sued in court and go to court and discuss this because we have had the election for the local station board before the latest...
You see, I don't want to get into this current thing.
Because it all relates.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't relate to what's going on this morning, and it's not going to make money, and that means I'm not going to be... And that means I'm not going to be on the air next week, and that means it's all lost at that point as far as I'm concerned, and I have the right to take a very solipsistic view about this. Okay? So, you know, let's look at it that way.
Jim, no, listen. When the listeners know that the truth can be explored as a mystery that has to be...
I am not getting into the current station politics and using names. I didn't even mention the names of the people in 77. Did you notice?
Goings on at the station.
Which have nothing to do with Hour of the Wolf at this time other than the continued survival. And right now the only thing important to that survival is to get calls in.
But you're not going to get calls when people feel that you're restraining...
Do you know what's one of the things that we learned about 77? Is that when we came back on the air and we talked about the politics, and when good people like John Stanley were talking about that and all that, well, that's when we lost the listenership. People don't want to hear it.
Jim, that's
a fact.
Opinion.
No, it's a demonstrable fact.
No, let me say it this way.
Let's put it this way. Right now, I'm not raising money. Right now, I'm not pitching, and I've got to get back to that. I'm going to give you about 30 seconds, and then I'm moving on.
All right. Jim, I say to you this, that unless we talk about this thoroughly, it's going to be a sense that there's manipulation involved.
You know what? You already mentioned that you have forums in which to talk about this thoroughly. This radio program is not one of them.
Bernard White called the listenerforums.net board the bleeping blue board, and he refused to let his advocates of the JUC, the Justice...
Okay, I'm not getting into this, and those 30 seconds are up.
Let them listen. Hello?
Yeah, listen, I'm going to hang up now. We're so far off topic. I'm done. I'm sorry. I gave you your chance. You're off the air. Okay. And I'm not going to apologize for that. Or I am going to apologize for that. I'm sorry that you fail to understand that we're not going to get into that end of everything. It's not the point of this show. This is an entertainment show of that I hope will be provocative at the same time. Let me mention this to listeners. That is the premise of what we do in Hour of the Wolf, and that is the premise of what the best speculative fiction tries to do, is we attempt to, whether it's comic, serious, didactic, or whatever, science fiction and fantasy have the ability to take a look at the world and as it is currently constituted and extrapolate that to another place. People get very frightened by that. People take a look at, for example, the movie Avatar, which, by the way, I finally saw. I went with Margot Adler, as a matter of fact. And the everybody puts their own, takes their own imprint of the politics of Avatar, and they say, oh, it's anti this, or it's anti that, or it's pro this, or it's pro that. And different people get different things out of it. And that is because Cameron knows, understands the deep lying power behind science fiction and behind its ability to not only tell an exciting story, which I do not think is the long suit of Avatar at all, but to tell something about the world today, which is one of the long suits of that film. And it's a perfect example because it has transcended the literary community while being, now the biggest selling movie of all time since it outdid Titanic. Everybody is aware of this. This is now mass culture, something that most good science fiction never is. And I still maintain that in what was the best written science fiction film of 2009 is a small movie that nobody has seen. And I'll just tell people again, it's called Cold Souls, and it's now out on DVD, and you should rent it. At any rate, that probably means it'll be on cable soon enough as well. It stars Paul Giamatti. At any rate. And there's another movie, by the way, that does a wonderful job of talking about us today and looking at things today. And that is, in fact, the kind of extrapolation that I am trying to make with the crisis of 1977. And its importance today. The importance today is one plain and simple. It's the survival of the radio station. And I have no interest in airing either dirty or clean laundry of the station's politics on the air, other than to say that, A, we should not forget what did go down in 1977. There was so much talk about it. Yes, it is a fact. It is not opinion. It is a fact that one of the reasons we lost so many listeners is that we aired our laundry on the air for about 6 months nonstop. We didn't even, after we came back to the air on April 1st, we didn't even return to our normal programming for a period of, at least half a year. Then we, so we're now into the fall of 77. I remember I went away during the summer, and when we came back, only then did we start easing off. And I was actually appointed, which I became, God help me, chief announcer of the radio station in one of the only paid positions I've ever had here in all the years I've worked here, which, by the way, I've been a volunteer here since 1967, we think. It might have been 66 if Robbie Barish is right, but I think it was 67 and that I'm just wrong about, you know, whether it was the first fundraising drive or not. At any rate, it is all about the capability of this radio station, the need for this radio station to survive. And to finish the point I was going to make earlier, one thing that we proved at that point was not only how much we earned a distrust of the listeners by not staying on the air at that point, but how disinterested all but a few people, maybe a couple of hundred people in a listening area of approximately 25 to 30 million, how few people were actually interested in hearing that politics. But the same 200 or 300 people went on and on and on. It sounds like it was a diverse group of people. Well, any group of 200 or 300 people will sound diverse. But when all was said and done, there was that same 200 or 300 people that were listening to the station, and not too many others. And it is from that that we have had to climb back and have still not fully climbed back. And And in recent times, this radio station has gone heavily into debt and has also apparently encountered, it is only now being revealed, another problem, that while we got a lot of money in pledges, we have not seen a very high fulfillment rate of those pledges. So it's like we have to make double the money this time. And I have major plans to do that with some entertaining and provocative programming next week. But for me to get there, for me to get on the air next week, we have to raise and make money this week, okay? That's the whole point. And while I see we have a number of people calling up to speak on the air at this time, what we need are people to call up and pledge. And that is not yet happening. And I have to say, you know, I would like to entertain calls on the air. I would like to talk about it. But I'm not going to get into battles with people naming names and going on about what is essentially off topic. And while I think there's a lot of things that people, and that include Monroe, that could say that are on topic, that wasn't it. And no, like Al Lewis told him, I'll say the same thing. There is no free speech on my show. I moderate and determine what is best for all. Gave it a chance, but the moderator hath spoken here. But what we need to do is we need to get back to the core. We need to get back to the idea that we need to continue. We need to make money. And you need to make a phone call. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950 is the number to call to pledge to WBAI. I have been on the air for almost an hour. And we're dealing with very round numbers here, which is to say we have not yet gotten a penny. Please make that first call. Get the ball rolling. 212-209-2950. We don't have a special premium this morning, but we do have the same one that we offered last week, that we talked about all last week. And it's an evergreen. That is to say, it will always be cool and will always be worthwhile. By the way, now one phone call is coming in. Very good. Thank you. Let's get another. 212-209-2950. And that premium that I am discussing, there's a second call. Excellent. Let's keep it going. 212-209-2950. That premium is the 40th anniversary tribute to The Star Pit, a radio drama produced for WBAI by Baird Searles, written by Samuel Ardalany, one of the greatest science fiction writers of all time, and also one of the great African-American writers of all time. And it's very interesting because I was saying that writing science fiction, writing speculative fiction, is very much a look of the day in which it is written. You take a look at something, and certainly if you listen to the radio drama, you will hear a lot about the year 1967. But the story that Delaney wrote is so human and so deep that, like so much great literature, it will... it's an evergreen. It tells us things about the soul of humanity today and continues to do so. And that radio drama, The Star Pit, does that. And what you get for the $120 is you get a 4-CD set. You get the original radio drama, which runs just shy. I told the people answering the phones that it was over 2 hours. That's wrong. It's just shy of 2 hours, and that's on 2 CDs. And then you get an event that I produced, not for WBAI, but as part of the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings. And that reminds me, I have to plug the next one coming up. At the 40th anniversary of the radio drama, in which Delaney, I interviewed him and we talked. He talked about how the radio drama came to be written. And then we did two major scenes from the radio drama with Lois Kagan Mingus and Samuel R. Delaney and myself. And this premium is yours for a $120 pledge. If you only want the radio drama, by the way, you can get that for $60. But I recommend the full set, the 40th anniversary edition. It's sort of like getting, you know, you don't just get the movie, you get the extras, the DVD extras. Well, this is 4 CDs and not a DVD. But there it is. And it honors many things. It honors science fiction and fantasy, which have been a tradition since the 60s on this radio station, as born forth by Baird Searles and continued by Margot Adler and myself, and Mickey Waldman did some on the air. A lot of fine people have done a lot of good SF on our air. And then, on top of that, it honors radio drama, something that WBAI very much strives through the years to keep alive, at sometimes more than others, but some of it spectacular. And while the sound of the Star Pit, in terms of what one can do in radio drama production, may be a little bit dated, the piece itself is not. So number two, you're honoring radio drama. Number three, it's Black History Month. And it's a great time to go out and honor one of the best, one of the finest writers in the 20th and 21st century, although Chip hasn't been writing as much science fiction today. Still, he's teaching today and writing science fiction and all that. Honor his writing and honor his work and that of other African-American writers of speculative fiction. We'll be talking about that a lot next week, assuming that we raise some money this week. So these are among the things. Oh, and number four, keep the bleepin' radio station on the air and show the powers that be at this radio station that speculative fiction programming is something that you value and support and want to assure that it continues on these airways as it has on this program, on Hour of the Wolf, since 1972. Now, 1972, Hour of the Wolf, as created by Margot Adler, was on the air 5 days a week. I was her co-host Thursdays and Fridays, and those were the speculative fiction mornings, the science fiction mornings. I took over the show in 74, but always, and when the show got narrowed down to 2 days a week and then 1 day a week, what I kept was the science fiction element and not I don't have Margot Adler's acumen at journalism. She's one of the finest journalists out there, so far as I'm concerned. But the science fiction is what I have kept. And the idea that this continues, the idea that this goes on and has continued to go on, is a rare, rare thing indeed. And it really only happens on non-commercial station, and I like to think that it happens at its best here on Pacifica Radio and in New York, largely on WBAI, and largely because you're going to make a call now and pledge, and you're going to celebrate all those things. Science fiction radio, Samuel R. Delaney's production of The Star Pit, Black History Month and speculative fiction writers, etc., etc., and so forth. And you're going to do that by making a call now. 212-209-2950 is the number to call and pledge your support. Right now, one call is coming in. We have raised $25, for which I am grateful, but that is really, you know, but a drop in the bucket. That basically doesn't necessarily pay for the transmitter time, the internet time, the electricity, and the resources that we have used so far just to broadcast this show so far. So we need to make a major dent. So please make that call now, 212-209-2950. And above it all, yes, make a pledge to commemorate what went down in 1977. And, of course, the 50th anniversary of WBAI. There are so many things to be grateful for, to commemorate, and to support. And you do that by calling now, by making a pledge now, 212-209-2950. One call is currently coming in, and last week, actually with a couple of web pledges, we did break $1,000, which isn't everything that we hoped it could be, but is, you know, it's a dent, it's a start. And we need to do that and better between this week and next. Make that call. Make that pledge. $25 or more makes you a subscriber to WBAI. And $120 will get you the 4-CD set of the Star Pit 40th anniversary. 212-209-2950. Two calls are currently coming in. That's the way to do it. Thank you very much. 212-209-2950. Make that call now. Make that pledge now. There are people who have been here all night and other people coming in now to answer calls, and we are grateful to them for giving of their time, and we're grateful for you for making it worth their time and worth their effort to be here. Let's get them busy. Let's get them going on the phone so that they have not given of their time, of their night, and their energy for nothing. 212-209-2950. One phone line is in use. That means we can get more calls coming in. 212-209-2950. The more, sooner that we get those calls rolling, the sooner that this stuff starts going, the sooner I can talk about other things. One thing I want to talk about, by the way, the next New York Review of Science Fiction reading will be in a new venue, Soho Gallery for Digital Art. We will be there through the end of this season. And our curator this month, I am the producer of that series, the curator will be Joe Monti. We're celebrating our 20th anniversary there. Lots of anniversaries. That's our 20th anniversary. And Joe Monti, who was a curator of the series for 2 years, 3 years, always manages to book amazing people. He brought Ursula K. Le Guin to read there and all that. Well, this month will be no exception. This coming month, because it is, in fact, March 2nd, at the Soho Gallery of Digital Art. And the readers will be Toby Bukel, Tobias Bukel, who is a best-selling writer of... he has three novels currently out in a collection of short stories. He's also an interesting character as a person who has been a professional blogger since 1999, at which, you know, blogging wasn't even really, they called it web logs. They didn't even have the word blogging at that time. That's how cutting edge he was. But he will be there to read of his fiction. And then, and this is a first-time announcement, the other writer, the other reader, will be L.A. Banks. And she is an African-American writer of, she's got a wolf, werewolf series. I think it's a trilogy, and there's also some manga and graphic novels involved there. And a book series, The Vampire Huntress, and she writes, she writes Scarface books for Showtime. She has about five different pseudonyms, and she's written Chicken Soup for the African American Soul, and she's just a fun and wonderful writer, and it amuses me that she will be one of our two readers, because right now Margot Adler has been embarking on this study of vampire novels on NPR. Ooh, we've raised $145. Not a lot of money, but it's, you know, we're into three whole digits now. And no calls are coming in. That's 209-2950. So Adler is doing this thing, which I believe next week is going to be made live on the NPR website. And so she's 75 vampire novels and more to come. And so here's one of the most prominent writers. Oh, yes. And another, possibly the other African-American writer of vampire novels is somebody who I hope to have on the air next week. I'll have to ask him. He's been on the air several times before, Terrence Taylor, a wonderful, wonderful writer and a just nifty and spiffy person overall. as soon as I've hinted to him that we should do this, and he said, oh, yeah, sure, absolutely, but I just didn't confirm the date. I'll be in touch with him soon. Actually, he and I have been in touch several times during the day via email, but we were talking about, oh, other things. Food. Lady Gaga. Shelving. And for all that, I still say, oh, yeah, by the way, can you be on my show next week? I know he's willing. The question is he able? But Cherie Renee Thomas, who coincidentally was on the air 2 weeks ago, should be coming back. And the premium at that point will be her book. So that's assuming we can make that deal for WBAI, which is why we're not doing it this week, because we haven't been capable of doing that quite yet. So on March 2nd I don't know these things by heart, being a new venue. We've been at the South Street Seaport for the last 8 years. And I certainly memorized the different addresses there, pier this or building that or whatever. But I think it's 138 Sullivan Street. But you know what? Go to my website, ourwolf.com, or get on my mailing list, and you'll have all the particular details about when and where the reading will be. Or, by the way, you can subscribe to my Twitter feed, just Jim Freund, through Twitter. Or, at this point, I'm also doing a lot on Google Buzz, the latest thing, the newest thing. And I'm enjoying it a lot, although there are concerns, but I think they're being addressed. Privacy concerns, you understand. So I make these announcements there. And that would be jim.freund@gmail.com. Or if you just go onto Google and onto Buzz, buzz.google.com, and search on my name, it will tie you into my feed and tell you more about the reading. Okay? And it is from that reading series, that which I record every month and often broadcast pieces from, it is from that series that we did the 40th anniversary celebration of The Star Pit with Samuel R. Delaney, part of which I played for you on the air last week. And that is a premium that we are offering this week. And I believe one person has taken advantage of that this morning, because we got a $25 pledge, and we got a pledge for $120, and is therefore safe to assume that $120 pledge was for that 4-CD package. So let me encourage you to do one or the other. Just make an outright donation to WBAI of $25 or more and become a subscriber to the radio station, or take advantage of this premium. Donate $120 and we will send you this 4-CD set of The Star Pit and the celebration of The Star Pit that was held a couple of years ago at the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings. The number to call is 212-209-2950 to support WBAI, to support Hour of the Wolf, and to prove a few things to a lot of people. 212-209-2950. By the way, did you all notice that for the first time I opened the program with the trailer of the film Hour of the Wolf? That is what we heard at the opening. And the meaning of Hour of the Wolf is something that I'm sick and tired so many people get wrong. Partly the result of a misunderstanding of the author of Babylon 5, who used to be a Pacifica worker on the West Coast himself, Mike Straczynski, Joe Straczynski, wrote an episode called Hour of the Wolf, and as far as I'm concerned, completely got... He said, oh, it's at 3 a.m. when people's thoughts are this and that. Well, I played you the quote the trailer from the film after which this radio show was named. And it is an old concept. I was talking about it with Veronica Shanus, Professor Shanus, when she was on the air. And she said, oh, you mean Vargteamen, which is, of course, by the way, the name of the movie, which is, by the way, certainly can be construed as a vampire flick. There is certainly a vampire in there. Maybe an Ingmar Bergman movie, and it may be very heady and all that, but yes, it is, in fact, one of two prominent Swedish vampire films. The other one, by the way, is called Let the Right One In. And by all indications, is a fine and interesting movie, but one that I will probably not see because I don't like gore. I don't like, you know, watching flesh rent asunder in cinema. It to me, it's not entertaining, no matter what it may be. So I'll probably choose not to see that movie, although it does sound very interesting. But Hour of the Wolf is what we are discussing here. And the continuance of Hour of the Wolf as a radio show on a and the continuance of the radio station on which Hour of the Wolf is a radio show is paramount, no pun intended, this morning. 212-209-2950. One person is currently calling and pledging, please be the next. 212-209-2950. $25 makes you a subscriber to WBAI, and $120, our way of saying thank you, as they say elsewhere, will be this gift set, this set, anniversary tribute of Samuel R. Delaney's The Star Pit, produced for WBAI in 1967 by Baird Searles, and written by and starring Samuel R. Delaney. And then and then after that, we have two CDs of the tribute, which were, in fact, an event at the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings. We have other agendas that I want to deal with on the air, but the fundraising drive necessarily gets in the way of that. Two fine, fine, wonderful science fiction writers have passed away in the last few, last couple of weeks, as a matter of fact. And each one of them deserves an entire tribute program, and I'm going to have to figure out where those are going to fit in, because starting in March, we have guests coming in again and things like that. On March 20th, Tempest Bradford, yet another African-American writer. This is all, you know, this is not like planned that it shall all happen at this time of year. These are simply the people I admire and work with, and that's the time at which a particular book is coming out. And the name of that book is Chicks Who Dig Time Lords. I kid you not. And I am no small Doctor Who fan. I'm a major Doctor Who fan. So, you know, how can I not invite people from that anthology to come on the air and read from it and talk about it and stuff like that. And there are wonderful people in that book, Kat Valenti and Tempest and all that. Well, you'll hear a lot more about it. That's March 20th. And the week before that, I have to look at my calendar, but we've got good things going. But the people that I want to do tributes to and for, one of them is Cage Baker. Who's like all of a year or two older than me, died of uterine cancer a couple of weeks ago after a nasty battle. And she's author of, she was on this show three times and was author of one of my favorite science fiction series, a book called, a series called The Company series, referring to Dr. Seuss. This is eight novels and, I don't know, 25 or 30 novellas and short stories, the first novel of which is entitled In the Garden of Eden. And when the fourth book was in that series was just coming out, I had her in studio to talk about the synopsis of the entire company series, which is now finished. And she was talking about what was yet to come and the first few books. And then, and it's very difficult to keep that what they call spoiler free, but it's difficult to not tell you about stuff that happens at the end of the third, at all during the third book, because that becomes evident about, it counters something that happens the first book, you see. But we managed to do it. And so I want to play that. And I have a reading of her that was done at the other fine reading series in New York, the KGB Fantastic Fiction Series, where an abridged version of her novella, The Empress of Mars. And we have the exclusive recording of that. And I want to play both of those one morning as a tribute to her life and career. And then another person who was 89 years old, about to be 90 years old, Philip Klass, who wrote under the name William Ten, one of the great, great science fiction writers, hilarious satirist, wonderful, sharp, sort of like, if how to describe, I hate to say it something like this, but it's not far off the mark. If Paddy Chayefsky wrote hard science fiction, it might have been William Ten. But among his wonderful short stories, he had one called My Mother Was a Witch, which actually in some ways isn't a science fiction story. It's actually just sort of a Yiddish story. His name, he resembled more Myron Cohen than William Ten. And there's a famous story about how he once met William Ten, even though that was his own pseudonym. But we don't have time for that this morning. Another wonderful story of his, Party of the First Part, which is, I think, one of the great First Amendment stories ever written, and just hilarious, brilliant, wonderful science fiction. Amoeba crash lands in New York, sells filthy pictures, filthy postcards to a biologist, which of course are of amoeba splitting. And there occurs on another planet an obscenity trial because this professor published pictures of amoeba splitting in clarity that could not be done before. Of course, to the other amoeba, this was pornography. It's just fabulous, wonderful stuff. Bernie the Faust is another story of his. And he's a favorite writer of mine. And I've done several shows of his fiction in the past. There were several radio dramas, X Minus One, Dimension X, of his work that Max Schmid has access to. And Max says, I gave it to him. Ooh, I see that we raised a little more money. Thank you very much. Pardon. So we're up to $170, which is nice, but we need to do more. I do thank the people who've pledged, but we need to do more. 212-209-2950 is the number to call and pledge. 212-209-2950. So those are at least two tribute shows that I need to do. And we have guests coming up and readings that I am producing and recording in the other reading series, which I am not producing, but nevertheless recording and broadcasting some of that's the KGB Fantastic Fiction series. So we are jam-packed with material, great material, wonderful material for you. But in order for it to get onto the air, in order for us to make a difference, to keep the radio station going, and to make the radio station itself take note that this program is something that is valuable to you, the listeners, we need calls coming in. We need to do a lot better than $170. 212-209-2950. We are now in drive time, primetime radio. Why it's drive time on a Saturday morning, I've never been clear. But it is indeed that, and there are indeed a lot of people listening right now. And we need those people. We need you, because if you're hearing me you live, you are one of those people. We've been getting phone calls to this radio station, to this program, from a listener in Bulgaria. That's, I mean, it doesn't get cooler than that. And I know that we have a number of listeners in Canada and in Boston. This is thanks to the internet stream. And as we move more into new media and question, can we pod this? Can we do that? All these things take resources and they take money. And what the priorities to the station are, where that money gets spent, what kind of programming it is done on, is very, very important. And the thons are something that they look at to gauge all of this by. And if you take a look at the premium list that we've got for all the various things, it's, you know, more than 90% political. We need... I see there's a little cooking in there. That's very cool. And some health programming. But we need to push arts programming and put it back in its place on this station. And, hey, let's do it with Hour of the Wolf. Why not? 212-209-2950 is the way to do that. And you know what? I'm going to take a little break. I'm going to play a cut of music. I don't know what yet. Let me, in fact, go into the hard drive that I've brought with me. Ah. Okay, but I will have to do some minor, pardon me while I move the mic, have to do some manipulations here to get that back up in the browser in order to be able to choose a cut of music for you. And of course, they've, you know, changed the computers in here. So, let us play a bit of music, and then we will be back, and we're going to push real hard once more to make some serious money this morning, so that we can concentrate more on content and money raising next week. Or just call now. And I won't have to push as hard. 212-209-2950. And, oh, sure, let's have some more Natalie Merchant. And another old song, and just one that she does in a manner that I love. Here's a song from 1911.
I once loved a sailor. Once a sailor loved me, but he was not a sailor who sailed on the wide blue sea. He sailed in an airship, sailed like a bird on the wing, and every evening at midnight he would come to my window and sing. Come take a trip in my airship. Come sail away to the stars. We'll travel to Venus. We'll sail away to Mars. No one will see while we're kissing. No one will know as we swoon. So come take a trip in my airship, and we'll visit the man in the moon. Sailing away from the clouds, we passed through the milky white waves. While idly drifting, watching the clouds, he asked if I'd name the day. Just by the dipper, I gave him my heart. The sun shone on our honeymoon. We swore to each other we never would part, and we teach all the babies this tune. Come take a trip in my airship.
You're tuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial Pacifica Radio in New York City, WBAI at 99.5 FM and at WBAI.org. That was Natalie Merchant with a song from 1911, an Irish song from 1911. Richard Bowes tells me it's an old Irish song, and he always knows this stuff. It's amazing, his knowledge. Two of the pledges that I can thank people for by name include Jonathan Gladstone Gelman, who from Brooklyn in Canada, I kid you not, and he almost always comes through. He's a major donor to the radio station, and we are always grateful to him. And he's taking advantage of that CD package. And the person who I hung up on not long ago, he himself pledged $25, Monroe Littman. Thank you both for donating. And we've gotten at least one other pledge, but that's a person who preferred not to have their name mentioned over the air. And one can probably understand why one would make that choice. But okay, it's 6:31. We have about 25 minutes in which to make a serious dent here. Okay, so let me move the mic. Here, we've got this tiny little souffle cup of water. Take a sip of that. Move the hard drive and the Murph. That's my phone. I call it a Murph. It's got a different name, but I don't feel like advertising it on the air all the time. It's not an iMurf. It's a Murph, okay? And I finally, you know, started remembering to mute it before I go on the air so it doesn't go Murph throughout the show every time I get an email or something. Okay. Listener-sponsored radio. We were talking about it. We were talking about how WBAI went off the air for 2 months in 1977. How lost a lot of its foothold on the landscape of radio listenership at that time. And how we dasn't ever let that happen again. And that's up to us. That's up to me to ask you to help us That's how it happens. That's the idea behind listener-sponsored radio, not listener-supported. Now, you know, in other words, it's not additional to all the funds we get from other places. The concept of listener sponsorship began, was born at Pacifica Radio. And when WBAI was donated to Pacifica Radio 50 years and a month ago, well, 5 weeks, 50 years and 5 weeks ago, we became the first such station in New York, the third such station in the country, and the corporate-supported and with listener editions and government-owned with listener support stations came really only in the 70s. Even the television, NET, before PBS there was WNET, was a different scheme, and that only started, I guess, early 60s, probably about the same time that WBAI joined the landscape. But Pacifica is a lot older than WBAI. And we were still there first. January 10th, 1960 is when we became a part of Pacifica Radio. And at that time, listener-sponsored radio became the scene in New York. And it has been a rocky road because given the access that people are given to air here and given the kind of folk that that is bound to bring about, that means you're going to get political actions of all kinds. And it means it's going to be a rocky road. Absolutely. And we've got to make sure that we don't, you know, oh, God, how far am I going to stretch this metaphor? That we don't burst a tire on that rocky road. Let's stop right there. And let's say, let's make sure we don't go off the bleeping air again, okay? And the way that's going to happen is by you. Yes, you. Don't look around. There's nobody there anyway. It's, you know, 6:35 in the morning. You. Pick up your phone. Make a call. Make a pledge. The phone number is 212-209-2950. The place is WBAI and WBAI.org. Well, it's the same place, but the access points are 99.5 FM in New York and WBAI.org. And the rest of the known and eventually, as it seeps out, unknown universe. The program that is asking you to do this is Hour of the Wolf, a show that has been on the air here since 1972 and is generally dedicated to speculative fiction, to science fiction, fantasy, and related fields of endeavor, primarily to the literature and secondarily to the visual and other media, audiobooks and things like that. But we deal primarily with literature here on this program. And this is an unusual thing. This is the kind of thing that could not happen elsewhere in the radio spectrum. And even then, when we talk about the other kinds of supported listener, supported media, you notice they don't do a whole lot of SF. It's always had a home here at Pacifica Radio. Here and at the other Pacifica stations, as a matter of fact. Richard Lupoff at one station, Mike Hodell, who used to be, in fact, worked with Margot Adler in the news department and then went out to the West Coast and started a fine program called Hour 25. These are the people, Baird Searles here and then myself, these are the people that have brought science fiction to the radio as producers. And it's all been because of the structure, because of the concept, because of the idea that Pacifica Radio, that listener-supported radio, can delve into these alternative views of the world and of the soul. And it's fun. let's get that clear. It's entertaining. These are all, and they use the medium of radio. They use the audio medium. Even in today's new media with all the digital technologies available, audio is making a certain comeback with podcasts and various things as younger people are discovering how wonderful the mind's eye is as a palette to draw upon. And we had that palette first, and we continue to use it here. We use our palette here at WBAI. My tongue can stick to my palate, but that's the palette we use. And Ken Gale, who has whose comic book program has recently, 12 years, been on hold, but will return to the air one day.
It started on this show.
That's right. It did. With what a guest, Jim Springer. Wow.
Jim Shooter.
Why did I say Springer? There is a Jim Springer. It's somebody else altogether.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but Jim Shooter. Pretty amazing.
I just wanted to elaborate on when you were talking about the value of science fiction. Because I think there's a lot of values to it that I think science fiction fans take for granted. And one of them, of course, is explaining science using fiction.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody has read Michio Kaku's book, Hyperspace, which is a book about 10-dimensional physics.
He defined the 10 dimensions, because those who called the fourth dimension time basically were wrong. And he explains that so well. And his model, I think, will be remembered and discussed in hundreds of years.
Well, one of the cool things about that book is that Michio Kaku, being a science fiction fan himself, and in fact he taught a class at CUNY, the physics of science fiction. If you take the book Hyperspace and just open it up at random, all right, one of the two pages you're looking at is going to mention a science fiction book, author, TV series.
Or concept.
And what happened, Michio knows that there are people whose business it is to entertain people and use science. So if you're using science and you're entertaining at the same time, you better be able to explain it well and succinctly and quickly.
And he
does it better than Michio could, so why not use it?
And Michio came to it from the other side, because when he started doing his program on WBAI, he was not reading science fiction. He and I had a discussion. This is somewhere in the 70s. Not even by the late 70s, he was already into it.
Yeah.
But before that, he was explaining to me how he was angered that science fiction didn't get science and didn't use it well. And then he started discovering the good stuff.
The good stuff. Right?
And also he started helping people create the good stuff. And that's when he became a fan of it. And now there are science fiction writers who come in here and go, oh, my God, Michio Kaku is on this station. He's written the Bible for a lot of science fiction writers, by which they can say, reading Michio Kaku is what got them to start writing science fiction. It's really come full circle. It's a wonderful thing.
It's a wonderful circle.
Yeah.
I didn't know about the circle part of it.
Well, yeah, because he was on this show
when
before he was a big science fiction fan, and when he was just beginning to discover it.
So, again, there's a value of science fiction because it teaches science, and scientists use science fiction to teach science.
And it teaches it in a palatable manner.
Well, yeah, that's the whole point
of
the entertainment aspect of it. And when people bemoan the poor science education of Americans, I think it's because science fiction is become mostly fantasy and mostly movies.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're missing a lot of it. We don't get it in our fiction. And when you don't get it in our fiction, it's less understandable.
Mm-hmm.
Because people who write textbooks, I used to be one, are not always aware of the problems people have in reading, of learning what they're trying to teach.
Yeah, and what's more, it's very interesting that you bring that up, because I was watching a documentary just last night, DVR'd from previously, and it was, as a matter of fact, a nature documentary. And
212-209-2950, support shows like this.
And they got some of this. They made so many inaccurate statements, and you could catch it right in there. And I'm not going to go out and cite it and all that, but remind me to tell you, by the way, about a show that I off the air. I have to tell you all. Ask me about Bill Bailey's Birdwatching Bonanza. It's a game show it's a birding competition game show. At any rate,
yeah.
These other things get the science wrong. Something science fiction tends to get right,
yeah,
actually.
Well, yeah, because they know their readers are going to know if they get it wrong, so they better damn well get it right.
But you have to
write
also
war fiction, make sure that whatever tank they talk about in their story is appropriate to the year of the story, because their readers will know.
Or Tom Whisker's going to catch you. And that's the funny thing, is that where science programs will get it wrong, and science fiction, which often doesn't actually give a bleep about the actual science within it, does get it right and makes it palatable. And people don't even realize often as they're watching it. We're not talking so much about science fantasy and the time travel things, which are all technically really fantasy, unless you really stretch. And, and faster than light travel and all these things are currently, by our understanding, not, well, as Michio would say, the physics of the impossible. But nevertheless, it is the likelihood and the ability, the what-ifs of it all, yeah, that science fiction explores. And it's not didactic.
And, there's one other aspect that I guess I kind of realized, but not to the extent, is the power of imagination. I used to feel that when people say Americans don't invent stuff, I thought it's because of work for hire. You don't get to benefit from your own invention because some company owns it. And then I'm listening to a sports talk radio in the morning, and the guy is going on and on about how imagination is for kids. And if you're a grown-up, you don't use your imagination. Mm-hmm. And the whole crew on this morning show is like, yeah, that's right, imagination's for kids and stuff. I'm thinking everything ever invented was imagined first. And I said, Wemmy, that's another reason Americans don't invent anything, because we are being taught through our weird culture to not imagine. Of course, science fiction fans and science fiction readers are not taught. They're taught to use their imagination.
And specifically, by the way, fantasy readers. I mean, the modern,
absolutely,
a lot of the modern inventors and people like that cut their teeth on Tolkien, on Le Guin's fantasy, the Earthsea books, and she has an essay about all this called Why Americans Are Afraid of Dragons, which is one of the best, and also From Elfland to Poughkeepsie. And Tolkien has one called On Fairy Tales that are all about how people, shy away from the great stories. And it is because they disdain them, and somehow they took a right turn and forgot that Grimm's household tales were not fairy tales for little kids, but were in fact household tales for everybody. Well, what's a really fun one? Is it Bennett's? Do you know the one I'm talking about, Simon? It's like Bennett's household stories or something. I thought if you're not familiar with it, I'll have to fix it.
Yeah, that's why it's a good, back-to-back, you and Simon locally, because you're both talking about great stories and concepts and things
He'll
like that.
He'll take the high brow and I'll take the low brow. But something along those lines. Not that James Joyce would ever be considered spec-fic, but it is all literature of the imagination.
It's all literature, right.
It's all literature, and it's all of the imagination. And it's all about bending those thoughts and using them.
I think that's the power of shows like Hour of the Wolf and on WBAI, is that we're not anti-imagination here. And I have mentioned, ever since I heard that.
I can only imagine.
It's been a month or two since I heard that that morning. And I've been talking about it ever since, and people around here are outraged and shocked that, you know, a so-called colleague, you know, somebody else on the radio would say things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, they represent America more than we do, I guess.
Yeah. But the funny thing is, and this is so true of a political place like WBAI, that the politics tend to drive the arts out, as you painfully know. And the
painfully indeed, yes.
And one of the reasons why people should call and pledge right now, especially with, with 5 minutes left of pitching time, is because we need to show them political types that the arts and literature of the imagination and programs of the imagining and entertainment are, in fact, the things that feed the masses, that feed the revolutionaries. And it's not just Soma. It's something very real and very palatable, and in many ways relates to the real world more than opinion tales and fact tales.
Well, I'm thinking of political t-shirts like Imagine Peace, you know, because imagining peace is sort of the one of the major steps in achieving peace. And any political victory must be imagined. And you must imagine the victory. You must imagine the steps to take to get to that victory.
Okay.
So again, imagination is a very important aspect of anything.
So imagine right now,
including sex.
indeed, or especially perhaps. So imagine right now, since it is now 6:50, and I have to get off the air at 6:50, 6:30.
Plus, people might be interested in this conversation or not calling.
Imagine making money. Imagine supporting this show so that we'll be here next week, because I otherwise I'm going to hear from the programming department, well, you didn't do well, and I have a very special show planned for next week, one that they would politically like. But in order for that to happen, I have to demonstrate that we can make money. And so we have to do that now in the next 4 minutes. 212-209-2950. We do have the same premium that we had last week, which is the 40th anniversary tribute to The Star Pit by Samuel R. Delaney. That's a 4-CD set. The first 2 CDs are the two-hour radio drama, and the second two are the tribute. The 40th anniversary tribute that I produced 2 years ago. And those are available for a donation of $120. We need to get a few of those this minute. Two calls are coming in. Thank you very much. Let's get two more. 212-209-2950. We've given you the rationale. We've done the talking. The gloves are off. Now you need to call. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. Make that pledge. Support WBAI. Show other people around the world that WBAI matters. And show those other people at WBAI that Hour of the Wolf and Spec Fic matter.
You're part of something much greater than a couple hours of fun on a Saturday morning or a few hours of fun, you know, with a good book. There's something more that you're doing when you listen to the show, when you read those books, when you talk about those books to other people who have read them or listened to this show. There is something greater going on. You are part of something. Yeah, reading a book is something you do by yourself. Listening to the radio is something you kind of do by yourself. But you're not alone.
Three calls are coming in. Let's get a fourth. We have people standing by. Let's make them work for the things that we're not paying them. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. Three calls are coming in. We have so far gotten a tally of $170. We obviously need to do a lot better than that.
The tally's not going to change because the person who would put that number up is answering phones.
So keep them even busier so that we further won't know how much we raise. But we need to raise it, whether I know it or not, how much it is. I do know we need to get those calls. We need to make that money. And right now, nobody else is calling in. 212-209-2950. We have 3 minutes left.
Chip Delaney's Star Pit is wonderful. He's wonderful. He's been doing this a very, very long time. He's sort of one of the people whose shoulders that everybody else is standing on.
He really is. And so many people here don't know it. It was before they painted the place, there were photographs of like Gore Vidal and Ralph Ginsberg and other people on the pillar out there. And one of those photos was a picture of Samuel R. Delaney. And half the people didn't know. They just saw this, you know, black man with a white beard going, gee, I wonder who that is. But, you know, hey, he's got to be cool. Well, he is cool.
Yeah, he is
and,
cool.
And He really is. And in 1967, he did this radio drama here that remains one of the best ever done. And we did an anniversary tribute to that. Both of these are available. The radio drama is available through Pacifica, thanks to WBAI. The tribute is available only through WBAI. 212-209-2950. Only one call currently on the line. That means we know we can take more, and we have 2 minutes left. 212-209-2950. Make that pledge now. Make that call now, and we will say thank you by sending you, for a $120 donation, we will send you that documentary and radio drama. And for $25, you simply become a subscriber to WBAI. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. The tally went up $20. Thank you very much. 212-209-2950. It is 6:54 and change. And Simon is changing the broken clock. And broken clocks are very much a part of WBAI culture. But
I hate the fact that the minute hand is so close to the hour, so you never know how close you are to the show
being over. Are you making it 6:55 so that I will get off the air now, taking away those that minute and a half that I've left? A minute and a half, 90 seconds left, and one call coming in. Come on, let's get a flurry of phone calls to celebrate. Let's get a blizzard of phone calls, given what the weather has been like. 212-209-2950
to refer to how many phone calls they want.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Somehow that's on people's minds.
It just storms right in. 212-209-2950. I don't. It really somehow accumulates.
What they say, people do talk about the weather.
Yes, and indeed, that's a Gilbert and Sullivan song that I don't have queued up. Okay, 1 minute left. 209-2950. Thank you very much. Let's get two or three more so that as we segue into As I Please with Simon Lokely, we have work for them to do before all the people call up for Lokely. But right now, let's call up for Hour of the Wolf. 212-209-2950. We have a little under a minute left. We need your call. We need your pledge. We want to be back next week or else we will be preempted. And that's what's on the line here at this very moment.
Judging by that number and the number of calls, I think we might be.
212-209-2950. Let's make sure it happens.
One of you is a big benefactor, Jim could really use a big benefactor.
And a new cool premium for next week, but we're not even going to get to offer it. We're not going to get to offer it if we're not going to be here. We're not going to be here if we don't make money. It's a vicious cycle. 212-209-2950.
Chip Delaney's Star Pit for $120. You get four CDs for that.
Which is about 3.5 hours of audio material, 2 hours
pretty
of the
cool,
radio
yeah.
drama, and 90 minutes of entertainment. And my time is up. I am starting the outro in the background so that I will get off on time, but I will continue. I will continue to cajole you and to say, come on, make that call, make that pledge.
If a lot of those lights are lit, we should go back there and answer them. If people are calling while the outro music is going.
So 212-209-2950. Thank you for listening. Thank you for those who are pledging. Thank you for you who are about to pledge this very moment. And the rest of you, well, thanks anyway. But make that call. Make that pledge. Stay tuned for As I Please and visit OurTheWolf.com.
And you can pledge the show online, which somebody did earlier this week.
Yes, for Hour of the Wolf, as a matter of fact. Yeah, I saw that.
You can choose, donate to your favorite show, and you can click Hour of the Wolf.
Do the premium that way. But then it doesn't show the programming stuff, so make the call now. 212-209-2950. Thank you all for listening, and good morning. Take care. Stay warm.
Set my sail.
is up to 300. Thank you. Let's make it higher. 212-209-2950.
Blow, blow, thou winter wind, thou art not so unkind as man's ingratitude. Thy tooth is not so keen, because thou art not seen, although thy breath be rude. Hey-ho! Sing hey-ho unto the green holly. Most friendship is feigning, most loving mere folly. Then hey-ho the holly. This life is most jolly. Freeze! Freeze, thou bitter sky, that dost not bite so nigh as benefits forgot. Though thou the waters warp, thy sting is not so sharp as friend remembered not. Hey-ho, sing hey-ho unto the green holly. Most friendship is feigning, most loving mere folly. Then hey-ho the holly. This life is most jolly. Perhaps a lyric suitable for a fundraising program, or perhaps a poetical comment on this week's weather. And my goodness gracious me, but Lordy Lord, did it not snow? Yes, it did snow. How much snow? No one knows. Just a lot. Now, a couple of weeks ago, there was a big snowstorm, and I was listening to the all-news radio station. I'll tell you, 880 AM. And I listened to it because I am just absolutely wild about Cameron Swayze. I think that he is just a perfect example of what a newsman can be. Any case, so he was giving a report about this big snowstorm a couple of weeks ago. and they announced that it was a record-breaking snowfall in Philadelphia. And the figure was ridiculous. I think it was like 12 inches or something. Well, I better not say that. Otherwise, Rosebud will be on the phone saying it was much more than 12 inches, but it wasn't 26. It was nothing like what we have had in our history. So, there you are. If you have had it up to your chinny chin chin with this year's winter, you might seriously consider moving to Philadelphia, where, though it snows, not nearly as much. And my goodness gracious me. So it snowed. All right. I mean, we're not the Donner Party, are we? Or are we? You know, sometimes I'm beginning to come round to the conclusion that the Donner Party is not so far removed from us. Or perhaps we should say from a certain mindset of management. When in doubt, cannibalize. That's the way it goes. And good morning and welcome aboard. Today is the 13th day of February in the year 10, and it is time once again for As I Please. Ken, I know you're probably deeply involved in something worthwhile and interesting, and yet I require your presence in master control. Or not, as the case may be. You know, hey, we're easygoing, after all. And it is this morning, the 13th day of February. Oh, my goodness, big weekend ahead, right? That I rather sadly announce that I must abandon a project which was dear to my heart and, judging by some of the financial support we received, something you liked too, and that was Orwell. And I'll tell you, quite frankly, I was threatened with eviction from the spot if we did not raise a certain amount of money, and the only assurance that I would have this spot was to dump the Orwell. Because, well, I don't know. I don't know what they think of Orwell. They may not be aware of Orwell. But you are, I am, and I guess that's all that counts. And let me just say this. I really do like Burmese Days. It might be my favorite of his early novels. And one of the reasons I like Burmese Days is it's not, there's a sort of a subcategory in English literature that we might call the Raj novels, novels that take place in India or in the far-flung portions of the subcontinent. The Jewel and the Crown is a crowning example by gosh. And what I like about Burmese Days is that in many ways it's really quite opposite to that kind of book. That is to say, our hero in Burmese Days does not go native. Indeed, our hero in Burmese Days is involved in the military police, all sorts of things that just don't make it quite as cozy as some of the other fantasies. Any case, Burmese Days, why not read it now? And, of course, as far as I'm concerned, it will always be Burma. So what did we learn during our brief effort to try to bring George Orwell to the air? Well, we learned a couple of things about school, I suppose, and the, shall we say, established themes of what I call school books. Loneliness, bullies, and injustice. In one form or another, these are bound to crop up. And yet, it's not just something limited to school. Now is it? For these are the lessons that you will carry on with you through the rest of your life. The world is unfair. There is always going to be someone stronger than you who will use that physical strength to grind you down. And it's often the case that you will find no one to talk to. And so here we are at WBAI, which in some respects might be considered an educational institution. In some small respects, an educational institution. Although I will point out that not a whole lot education going on about the art of radio. Although, God bless Max Schmid. If there is one place where people can still learn what radio can do and used to do, well, we got Max and his golden age. We got Max. That's enough. But to me, radio as an art form, and it's a dying art form. It's been slowly dying for years now. But to me, it's always linked in my mind to that initial burst of literary modernism. The idea of a commercial radio station established in Pittsburgh, I believe, in right 1922, the very same year that Ulysses was published. And the modernist quality of radio needs to be emphasized. Here in radio, we can present directly to you without any interfering medium. We can go out and get somebody actually saying something and give it to you and do it quickly. And speed is an essential quality to radio. The very fact of the matter is, and you know, if you have been listening to As I Please for any length of time, you have perhaps heard me say that in a song by Frank Sinatra, 3 minutes and 14 seconds, let us say, a good deal happens. It's a small play. Well, the same thing applies to the notion of a produced 3 or 5 minute story. You can pack in a lot of information in those 3 to 5 minutes. And indeed, were we not here trying to raise money for this radio station, I would hasten to point out that 99.5% of the programs that you hear on WBAI are overlong. Why? Because they say, now we'll take some phone calls to fill in the gaps. When instead, by saying, I have 8 minutes worth of material to present, I will present it as best I can and make sure that it gets on the air. Ah, yes, ah, yes. Ah, radio, do you remember radio? Do you think fondly of radio? Well, I think you're showing your age because we're a dying crew. Now, let's see. Something's wrong, but who knows what. Well, be that as it may, right? It is the 13th of February, the year 10, and this program is going to be a bit different this morning. A music program, in fact. And I will actually be playing a different introductory theme this morning. It will still be bassy, mind you. My goodness, there's some things we couldn't change even if we wanted to. But it will feature the great tenor saxophonist, like that, that's a European way, and not a very common European way. Yes, the great tenor saxophonist, Lester Young. I know, usually you hear the great Herschel Evans, but today, Lester Young, and a lot of Lester Young. And why, you ask? You say, why? Because Monday is President's Day. A day set aside by act of Congress to celebrate Lester Young.